Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Well, I'm not Mr. Alan Levy. Well, if I am, everybody gets a raise here at Blog Talk Radio. But no. So, Ron, Hillary's on with me. What?
Who are you instead? Introduce yourself.
I'm Sean Daly. I'm Sean O'Mac. I do several shows every day here on Blog Talk Radio. I do the Blog Talk Radio Today program, and also I host the TV Talk, and also I'm on Nikki Starr's program twice a week, as well as the Pop Culture Hour on Sundays at 8 o'clock, and whatever else. I've been off to the Democratic National Convention a couple weeks back, and Monday or Tuesday I take off to New York to the Web 2.0 conference in New York City. So we're getting around. So, and Hillary's on with us, right?
Hi, yes I am, and it's kind of perfect that even though Alan couldn't be here at the last minute, Sean is here because Sean is what I would call a true citizen journalist, and I think it's really appropriate, our very special guest today, to be speaking with Sean, because I'm sure you guys have a lot in common. But anyway, yes, Hillary is here. That is myself. I am usually co-hosting with Alan, but glad to be here with Sean, who knows the power of Blog Talk Radio through and through. Mm. And we should introduce our special guest. Sean, you want to take the lead?
Sure. We have Mr. David Perlmutter on with us. And, of course, he was just on The Daily Show and the author of the new book out called Blog Wars. David, are you there, sir?
Hi, thank you.
Hi, it's an honor to speak with you. I'm quite an admirer of your work.
I'm flattered and honored as well. I love Blog Talk to Radio, and Alan is a genius for putting this together, so I'm very happy to be here.
That he is. So, I mean, how do you feel, Blog Wars? First, tell us about the book, and I don't, from my perspective, I blog a little bit, but I mean, what kind of age are we in right now with the blogosphere? What's the age? Are we in maturing age, or where are we at in the evolution of the blogs?
I think we're still in the infant years. Just in terms of time, television was invented in the very early part of the 20th century. It didn't become a commercial medium until 1949, 1950. So just from the commercial internet, the development of blogs in the late 90s, the rise of blogs to prominence, popularity, and power in the, say, after 2003, 2004, we are, just got out of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I tell people, I'm not going to get into the predictions business, but I just don't think that the genie of citizen journalism, of social interactive media, is just going to be put away and we're all going to go back to just staring at screens and eating potato chips.
Yeah, once you unleash the beast, you can't put it back into its little container. I would agree. Well, we should give a little background on David before we go further. David Perlmutter is a professor of journalism at the William Allen White School of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Kansas, and that's in Lawrence, correct?
That's right.
Great town. I've actually been there, and I love it there. So you have a very strong background in mass communications, and how did you first get into studying blogging? I mean, how did you first, obviously early on, you noticed the phenomenon, and what were some of your early observations?
Well, just a personal perspective, I grew up in an era where my parents watched the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite, and they were sort of political information junkies in a way, and so they subscribed to both Newsweek and Time magazine and got three newspapers. So they were very well-informed people for the time. But that was pretty much of our choices, and also if you weren't a journalist or a politician or somebody very prominent, important, or somebody quotably so with some very high credential, you didn't really have a voice. I mean, you could write a letter to the editor, you could maybe call into a talk radio show, but there was really no expression, and political campaigns were very top-down. Remember the world of the seven-second vizbite and the seven-second soundbite where a message from on high in a political campaign would be designed, and that's all. We just want to get in the evening news with our 7 seconds, and that's it. That was the world before interactivity, before citizen journalism, and now all these technologies, and blogging is just one of them, of course. You know, we have the YouTube phenomenon, the cell phone journalism phenomenon, the text messaging, Twittering, all, MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, all of these things have just unleashed this popular creativity of literally hundreds of millions of people trying different new things. And unlike anything where basically you'd banned, let's just imagine a population where you banned art. Nobody could do any art except for 15 people. And then suddenly you said everybody could do art. Well, obviously you're going to have hits and misses and things that are embarrassing and bad. But overall, it's truly amazing what's been developed.
I totally agree. And Sean, through Blog Talk Radio, has had a lot of exposure to political campaigns. Maybe, Sean, you have some observations about how the interactivity has changed this political campaign, for example.
Well, it's amazing, David. I did the whole Jericho Nuts campaign in 07, and then as soon as I got in touch here in Vegas with the Obama campaign, they kind of added 1 + 1, they got 2, and I figured out, oh, you're the guy. And then all of a sudden, I started getting all these invites to every event with the Obama campaign. And then towards the end, the Hillary Clinton campaign finally caught on, and I started getting these invites left one, hand over fist, one after the other. It's amazing. I mean, just one little thing, it can trigger all kinds of I don't know if it's acceptance or what. Maybe they keep the bloggers and the podcasters kind of at arm's length until they. Because they can't quite figure out what they are. They're a bunch of guys sitting in their mom's basement in their underwear, pounding away in the computers or what. I mean, and same with podcasters. I think podcasters we're in the same boat right now as the bloggers. They see us a bunch of kids sitting in their underwear screaming in a microphone. But it's amazing how a couple of things have
happened. First of all, they've noticed the prominence of bloggers, the large audiences. I mean, you have blogs like Daily Kos. I think their daily or weekly audience is like beyond the population of New Hampshire and Iowa put together. So blogs have arrived in terms of the traditional metrics of, you count because you've got lots of love eyeballs. The other thing is that they've seen the same surveys and they've done the same surveys that we've done and that other people from the Pew Center have done of bloggers. And when you see the profile of people who blog and people who read blogs, it's not the stereotype. Bloggers tend to be middle-aged, political bloggers. They tend to be middle class. They tend to vote. They tend to give money. They tend to show up if you want to have a political rally. They're not abandoning traditional political activation, and they're not just children. So they're a fantastic constituency or group. I mean, I think it's a little unclear about what you'd call them that is analogous to old politics, but they're certainly people that campaigns want to reach out and touch. And they're influencers in the sense that lots of people read them. We're all going to the Blog World convention, and one of the stats that they have there for Blog World is that if you count all the audience for all the bloggers who are going there, we're talking about tens and tens of millions of people who are paying attention to these bloggers. Politicians are paying attention. They're being invited to the White House, press passes. Bloggers have entered the corridors of power. What they do with that, we have to see. But they're there, and you're there.
Yeah. Well, I said before that the bloggers always have to be respectful where they're at and grateful where they're at because I mean they've come a long way in such a short period of time. Do you agree?
Yeah. As you know, one of the things we're doing at Blog World are these citizen journalism workshops, and sort of the basis of that idea is that maybe. Say 4 or 5 years ago, bloggers were this fringe group, and a lot of traditional journalists saw bloggers the way maybe a baseball player might see somebody from some fan who's yelling advice, about how to play the game or something like that. But I think now you have so many journalists who are blogging. In fact, it's sort of funny in journalism that what used to be called a column is now called a blog. A lot of journalists are writing their regular stuff and then blogging. Many professionals of all kinds, business people, moms, military, obviously, Marine Corps majors in Fallujah are blogging. It's become a popular, common phenomenon. So no way you can call it fringe. On the other hand, there are some things that journalism still has to teach. Journalism is not just a theory and it's not just an ideology. It's a practice. And so, for example, we in this workshop, we have Jay Perkins, who's a professor at LSU, And he's an old AP journalist. And, you know, he's perfected techniques of search engines and looking for government data beyond just the first 10 hits of Google. There's a lot of stuff to learn there for anybody, depending on what you're interested in within blogging.
Definitely. It's a whole new terrain. I am curious, David, how you first came up with this idea to have a citizen journalism workshop, and I was reading about it on the Blog World Expo website, and it seems really, really cool. It's a way to kind of give some traditional journalism practices and to improve, you know, the way blogging can be used and put out there in order to get actual media traction. Can you just tell the audience a little bit about how this idea came to you?
Well, yeah, as I said, I understand, and a lot of bloggers I talk to, whether they're left or right, feel that there should be some separation from the media. Some of them are just directly antagonistic and feel media are biased, and that has to be respected because, of course, it's what gets them up in the morning to blog in some cases. All I'm saying is that we probably can learn from each other, bloggers,
yeah.
academics who teach communication, professional journalists, because maybe in 10 years it'll be hard to tell the difference because you'll have professors who are also journalists who are also bloggers, and you'll have bloggers who are teaching who write a column for a newspaper. And just out of a practical nature, if you're trying to grow the audience of your blog, you have to know this. The Wild West days are over. I mean, the idea that you could just start a blog from scratch and just give your opinion of the Iraq War and build a gigantic audience that's going to rival Town Hall is just not going to happen.
There's just too many people out
there. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that, I think the Wild West analogy, I mean, the school marms and, like, the city halls have already moved in, and it's hard to just, reinvent the world. However, there are a lot of opportunities out there. Blog World is really about that. In specialization, there are people out there who are saying, you know what, I'm going to become an expert because I already have a lot of knowledge on plumbing, and I'm going to have a plumbing blog, and I'm going to use Google Ads and blog ads, and I'm going to just mine plumbing. And, you know, I'm not going to have a million people watching, but, of course, the whole world of media today is not about attracting 10 million eyeballs. It's about attracting a really a select audience that, advertisers are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And reaching out to regular media is the best way to get attention for your blog, whatever the topic is of your blog, because your hit rate is going to go up if you're covered in the local paper. Or the local paper hires you to be their blogger, which is happening
sure.
to
mm-hmm.
people all over the place.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's a good point. I liked what you said about people, bloggers especially, since blogging began as a kind of counterculture, and also people being able to make their statements without any sort of mediation or editing or regulation by anyone, that there's a conception that there's selling out that occurs if you become more like traditional media. And I kind of liked your response to that idea. Can you explain how you think it's not selling out and how bloggers can really benefit from using these techniques?
Yeah, let's suppose you felt that the building contractor industry was there was something wrong with it. You just didn't like the last building contractor that put up a house for you or something like that. Your reaction would be not to say, okay, I'm not going to read any book or learn anything about building a house. I'm just going to critique other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it would actually be probably more useful for you to study the hell out of, pardon my language, study the heck out of building trades and become one yourself and learn to speak from a platform of authority and legitimacy. And that, I don't think that's selling out. I don't think that you become the enemy somehow if you learn the facts. And you can always choose what you use and what you don't.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. So well, you tell us about the book, Blog Wars. I was at the DNC, and I happened to bump into Marcos Simolitis for Daily Coast. And I've noticed a change in him. I know a year ago I've been talking off and on for years, but in Chicago he was at the Yearly Coast, and I noticed he was a little. A lot of people say he's an egomaniac, but this time around it seems like he's a little more approachable, talkative. I mean, I guess explain the book and also some of these larger blogs. I mean, are they becoming huge places that blow up one's ego.
Well, I'm not sure I can comment on the last. I don't have any personal experience with that. But the book is sort of a history of how we got here from these early beginnings of interactivity. And I guess I'm a historian, so I have a little fun of looking back in ancient history and saying, were there blog-like forms that existed back then? And it's true. And then we also noticed that every time a new communications technology comes along, the old tech people say, oh, this is terrible, and everything's going to be destroyed. When a new technology called radio came along, and radio started being a venue for news, you have quotes in Washington Post, New York Times, editor and publisher. That's just terrible. Radio is a loud, raucous, uncontrolled medium. It could never be a source of news. Nobody should pay attention to it. This is the 1930s, okay?
Yeah.
So you can understand the perspective, and I sort of trace the history of how it entered the campaigns, Howard Dean, of course, being sort of a test case, and a lot of people, there was a sort of a blog blowback about, like, well, what do blogs really do? But I don't know any new technology that works the very first time. I ended the book actually saying that, if some political candidate can come along running for president and figure out how to make the new and the old work together, they're probably going to be nominated. I don't know if they'll be president. And Barack Obama's campaign, I think, is a textbook example of that, because not only have they used a lot of the new media, everything you can think of, they've done, every possible website or variation technology, Twittering, whatever, they've done.
Yeah.
But they were very good at the old stuff, too, which hasn't disappeared. You still have to allocate the right buses to show up in Columbus on Tuesday. You still have to do the voter canvassing, and you still have to, all the things you used to do well, you still have to do well. If you can do both, do it all in one package. And I think that's the reason he beat Hillary, is out-organization online and offline.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the Obama campaign, and I think it is a good part two to the Howard Dean example from last time. But I ask you, you think he's going to be nominated, but there's a big divide there out there in the wide world between people who use the internet, know what blogs are, read them, and those who don't, in my opinion. And those who don't really understand the impact that it has, and it's not just a niche thing, that it really can impact all other parts of society. And this debate comes up again and again, especially in the campaign with McCain, admittedly not very proficient using the internet or online technologies, and Obama's campaign as the polar opposite. Do you see this as some sort of, you know, divide among the generations here, or divide in how people view the internet and its importance for what's going to happen next?
Well, there definitely is a generational divide. If you do, there've been a number of different ways they've sliced this pie, but basically there's a whole generation of older people who are much less likely to use online resources to search for information. Some of them not even using the internet at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have a much heavier use of online resources among younger and middle-aged younger people. Some of the newer technologies, like text messaging, heavily used by business people and teenagers. You know, same thing about MySpace or Facebook page. The thing is that we still have everybody getting to vote. So there's going to be a large block of people who go to vote who have never read a blog or watched a YouTube video. If they leave their condo in Miami, from the retirement village or something like that. I'm sort of stereotyping, but that's true. However, you can make the case that even if you're not reading a blog, your political information is being affected by blogs, because the people who read blogs the most of any group in society by profession are journalists. Mm-hmm. Journalists are using blogs as their sort of native information source. They're where they used to, like, go out on the street and, like, hit their regular sources or something, now they're reading blogs, political blogs. And so you're seeing this compressed cycle now where something's talked about in the blogs, and then a couple of days later it appears all over the mainstream media. That some of the examples of that were some of the speculation about Sarah Palin's personal life and family and things like that. You saw that stuff hit the blogs almost immediately, and then a couple of days later, boom, it's on in Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can attribute Dan Rather in leaving CBS due to the blogs taking apart that news report on, 60 Minutes, or whatever it was. He did that during the last campaign with Bush, right?
Yeah, that was 60 Minutes, too, and there's some complication. I think I devote about 8 pages in my book to that story, because there's some complications mm-hmm. there, and I mean, who did what, but generally it was that. And what was interesting was that if you go back, and this was this presentation in 60 Minutes, too, of these memos regarding President Bush's National Guard service, but if you go back and you look at the right-wing blogs, and like Powerline, for example, or Little Green Footballs, and then you look at the left-wing blogs like Daily Coast, at the discussions, arguments, debates they had between each other and the evidence that they marshaled, that was fine journalism they were doing. They were digging mm-hmm. deep for the facts and looking for information. It wasn't just a bunch of people spewing opinion mm-hmm. at each other. So I would argue in a lot of cases, bloggers are doing better journalism than journalists, which raises something else. The journalism as an industry is cutting back all over the place. There have been a lot of studies about how, especially in metro areas, there are fewer mm-hmm. and fewer reporters covering all our aspects of government and life. In some way, journalism is getting out of the journalism business. Well, if you think of the analogy of 65 million years ago, asteroid wipes out the dinosaurs, and there are all these niches in the ecosystem for the little mammals to enter. Well, you know, the little mammals are the bloggers, and there's a lot of opportunities for bloggers to simply replace journalism because journalism isn't doing the job anymore.
Yeah, and I would argue that part of that is because, you know, the bloggers have less to lose. A lot of them who write anonymously and they're not tied to a corporation or a brand, and they can be a little more, quote-unquote, edgy in the sense that they can take more risks. And they can, and they did. I mean, they've broken a lot of stories, and it's highly unusual. I mean, I would agree. You said it's in its infancy because it's still, you know, when I hear my friends, young people, say they don't read a lot of blogs, I'm shocked because I basically live and breathe and sleep and eat blogs for a lot of my information, because as you said, the turnaround time is just so much longer to get something on a printed page when I've read it, you know, 5 days ago. So I agree.
Yes, and I think the key there is that it is true. A lot of people, and surprisingly a lot of younger people, you'll ask them, do you read blogs? And they'll say no. And I'll say, well, do you have a MySpace page? Yes. Well, a MySpace page is just a sister technology. It's really a spin-off of blogging, making blogging really interesting and pre-programmed rather than some of the free-form stuff you can do with a WordPress or Squarespace page. So they're blogging. They're just, I guess it's the success of something that people don't even realize it's there anymore, and they're just, it's something different, their Facebook or their MySpace page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you say to those? You know, my grandfather used to be a journalist in Chicago, and he died a few years ago, and the blogs were just coming out. He said, you know, blogs basically are editorial pages put on the computer. But I mean, and also, you know, about people, the argument mean that these bloggers don't have journalism experience. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I still believe in journalism school. I think that, you know, you come to journalism school, you do learn a lot. We're very up to date. If you go online to see the curriculum of most major universities' journalism schools, you'll see podcasting, blogging, multimedia. I always say, I have nothing against some of the other fields, but it's possible, say, in some other field to get up in front of the students and give the same lecture you gave 10 years ago. If I tried to do that, my students would laugh me off the stage because I couldn't get up there and say, well, let's talk about this new thing called television. You know what I mean? So they're in some ways a lot more advanced than we oldsters are, and they know what's going on at least in the technology part of the world. The challenge is that some of the really traditional stuff that you could probably learn from Plato and Aristotle is still applicable now. Good storytelling, finding out accurate information, hard work, ethics, learning how to do presentations of yourself, learning how to do outreach and build your own work in the eyes of others. that stuff is still as important. It hasn't disappeared just because somebody can put up a web page. I mean, we can train a monkey to put up a web page, I think. I don't know, I guess it has to be a pretty smart monkey. But there's a lot of other stuff, and I think probably, I hope you agree with me, that good storytelling isn't just instant. It doesn't just come to you out of the blue. You have to learn it over time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. My grandpa used to work for WMAQ Channel 5 in Chicago, and he worked at Channel 7 the later years of his career. It's amazing. And now about the book, I mean, what are you hoping the people come out, to read your book? What kind of, you expect to inform them about with your book, Blog Wars?
Oh, I hope it'll change their life. I'm waiting for Oprah. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Oprah has not called me yet, unfortunately. Oh.
We'll pull some strings.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry.
Would you call her for me? Thank you. I appreciate it.
She's on speed dial.
Yeah. I hope people get a perspective on why we are where we are, so that we know better about where we're going. I say in the book that I don't know what the future is, but it's probably not going to be unblogged. That we've learned a lot of lessons very quickly, and 2008 in a lot of ways is the year where we're going to figure out a lot of the big questions about using blogs, for example, in political campaigns, using these other technologies. I think we've learned so much just recently about the role of the web video, for example, YouTube. The publisher of the Washington Post many years ago, the late publisher now, Philip Graham, made this comment about journalism being the first draft of history. And it's true. The first, the Hindenburg explodes. First thing you hear is a journalist talking about it, somebody, a commentator. Now, people with their cell phones, people with their video camera, their point-and-shoot, bloggers are pretty much writing that first draft. And so we're profoundly affecting the future. That means we're affecting the world that we live in. Bloggers are affecting the outcome of campaigns. And I think anybody who wants to know about the way their world is changing, even if they're not part of it, even if they don't want to blog, which is a majority of people, they should at least understand how we got here.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I have a question, since Sean and I will both be at Blog World Expo, and hopefully some of our audience members listening will also be joining, which is coming up next weekend already. What can we expect from your workshop? Who's going to be speaking, and what can we expect to learn?
Yes. I'll be talking about reaching out to media, how bloggers can try to make contacts in the journalistic world, maybe even try to write pieces for online magazine, newspapers, TV websites, get attention, maybe get quoted, cited, hat-tipped by media to at least drive some traffic to get people to hear about their blog. And, of course, that's a big challenge, again, in this world where you've got hundreds of millions of bloggers and a lot of competition in practically every area of blogging that you can think of. We have Professor Steve Berry, who's a Pulitzer Prize journalist, teaches now at the University of Iowa, and he'll be talking about style, good writing, quality writing, some of the issues that journalists have to go through all the time. Again, bloggers can choose what they want to use or not, but I think some of these lessons really are timeless and apply to a blog post as much as they do to a feature story. As I mentioned, we have Jay Perkins from LSU, and he's an investigative reporter, so we're talking about search techniques. This is the kind of stuff that you can't get just by entering in Google. This is government databases and security databases, all sorts of stuff that I was a professor at LSU for a while, and the kind of stuff he would show me, I never would have thought of independently that you could find information there, political databases. And then we have Nina Yablok, who's an attorney, and she's going to be talking about something bloggers for a long time just could happily not pay attention to, but now you've got to pay attention to legal issues, copyright,
yeah,
lawsuits, slander, defamation, and she'll be talking about how not to blog your way into a lawsuit, and that's something of increasing interest to bloggers, or it should be, because the days where you could get away by saying anything because you felt nobody was reading you, those are over too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great workshop. idea, because definitely issues of copyright and intellectual property and all of these things that, as you said, used to be like the Wild West, now, you know, everything's being very carefully documented and tracked. You can't really say anything on the internet and not expect the person to find out, whoever you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a good tool for the toolbox of the bloggers.
Actually, we have a question from the chat room. Spike is asking, where do you feel the blogging industry will lead to in the upcoming years? Yeah, we've seen this evolution, and now we see Twitter and Plurk on the scene. Yeah, well, how do you see the blogging industry evolving?
Well, I think there are going to be two things that happen simultaneously. Maybe the analogy is television. In people's homes, you're seeing bigger and bigger HD TVs. On the other hand, a lot of people are watching little tiny grainy YouTube videos. I think the same thing's going to happen with blogging, is that you're going to have the growth of more and more of these gigantic group blog, community blogs. Huffington Post's success is one example of that. And it'll be about many different things, medical blogging, mommy blogging, military blogging, political blogging. But then you're also going to see the success of specialization. That is, people figuring out, you know what, I'm not going to sit here and blog about every subject under the sun and hope I'm going to build an audience. I'm going to just pick one thing, and I'm going to become the expert in that one thing, and that's going to drive ad traffic. That's going to get me known as the guy, the go-to girl, the go-to guy, the go-to person for this one thing. So I think it'll be an era of extremes for what will be successful blogging.
Interesting. Well, it's the same thing with podcasting. You know, a lot of people, I want to do a general news type of show, but then you know, it seems like turning out that with podcasting, the more niche shows, you know, the shows that talk about certain, you know, like here in Black Tech Radio, we have Sasquatch shows. I mean, those shows seem to be, you know, more and more popular. So I mean, it's smart, I guess, right?
I think. John Donovan, who's a very well-known mill blogger, mm-hmm. I think he's got one of the largest mill blogs, he made a comment that I love to quote. He said that he follows the Small Business Administration's advice, don't start a shop thinking you're going to beat Walmart.
Yeah,
in what they do, figure out something they don't do, specialize in it, and that's where you're going to make your money.
Definitely. Yeah. And not only that, but we still have, as you said, the mainstream media, traditional forms of media that are still, you know, alive and kicking, and they're most likely going to be covering some of those more general interest topics and more thoroughly with a higher budget than you, you know, in your little podcast or blog. So as an alternative media format, I think it benefits us to choose a somewhat alternative, at least angle, or alternative subject matter as well.
If 100,000 other people are saying it and doing it, I don't know if you're going to find a market for it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, some people just blog for the fun of it, and they're not necessarily interested in becoming one of those VIPs or getting on CNN or what have you. So for them, I'm sure they just want to write about their thoughts as, you know, like an online diary type of thing. But for anyone who wants to garner some sort of attention and, you know, leverage the field, I think that you're correct.
Oh, yeah, and it really depends on what your goals are. And there are people I know, and medical blogging, which is something I've been doing some work in recently, is a very good example. Medical blogging has been a tremendously helpful resource for the ill person. You know, if you remember the old days where, like, Aunt Ethel got sick and you're like, should we call the hospital? And no, we don't want to bother Uncle Bob and everything like that. Now people have blogs about their sick sister or they're waiting in the hospital and they're blogging about their illness and updating everybody, and they're using it to channel information and get support. So that's just one example. And their interest is not in, like, building an empire. They just want to help their family and themselves.
It's funny you should mention that, because Alan, our CEO and co-founder, that was how he got started with blogging, because his father was ill. And that's how he kind of entered into the world of blogging, and he discovered how large it was, and thus the idea for Blog Talk Radio, to communicate with people more easily using the Internet. So, but that's true. It is a good usage of the technology, in my opinion.
Yeah. Also, they're asking, how do you generate revenue from blogging?
Well, there are a number of different models. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one is the ad one, and mm-hmm. there are now many different companies that will set you up with ads. You obviously have to show the traffic that justifies there. There's, you know, there's blog ads, the company, there's Google ads. Mm-hmm. Bloggers are making money, thus the old-fashioned way about advertising. The subscription model, I mean, the Wall Street Journal is one of the only newspapers that can get anybody to pay for it online, so that's a little tough. Another model, which you know, I certainly advise to bloggers, especially if they're working in communities where the paper is casting around to try to, or the local TV station is, there are bloggers who are being hired by old media, traditional media, to do blogging because, of course, who are they going to go to get a blogger except an experienced blogger? So if you can prove that you fit into a niche of something that they need, you know, you can get an old-fashioned salary to blog.
Yes, and we've seen that at a lot of these conventions and conferences. There's a lot of traditional media companies, some bigger companies that are trying to develop an online presence and develop an online voice, and they're just befuddled and looking for a way in, and whether it's an experienced blogger or some sort of, you know, version of that that they need to capture. We've definitely seen that, so that's true. They want a piece of the pie as well.
Yeah, and they're willing to, just like in any other business, they're willing to go out and hire experts, and if you can say, well, I'm the expert in this, you know, you can make your case. Obviously, you have to fit in. There's some degree of compromise, and so I don't think it's like a one-size-fits-all solution because, for example, if you're going to start appearing with your blog on the newspaper website, they're probably going to, they might have some restrictions on what, I mean, not maybe political content, but like, say, what words you use or your tone that it might not be as problematic if it's your own independent blog. Everybody's got to make their own decision about to what extent they're willing to compromise who they are and what they do, but in terms of revenue, finding a way into a group blog where you share a pot or you're getting ads or you're being hired by a political campaign or by a media company or by, there's a whole world of commercial companies who I think one of my other predictions is there'll be a lot of car companies who are going to start hiring bloggers to work for them full time. Mm. To do their work, and that's what I meant by this specialty stuff. We politics is what's more exciting and interesting, but there's this entire other world of people who blog on lawnmowers and stuff like that.
It's true. On Blog Talk Radio, we have a lot of very niche subject matter. There's recently, I recall, a show about VW rabbits, and it was a guy who has a blog about VW rabbits and fixing them up, and you know, advice and tips and where to buy some vintage parts and that kind of thing. And it's pretty popular because, you know, if you have a VW Rabbit and you need to find out that kind of thing, that's where you're going to go. I mean, I found that to be amazing. I think that's one of the coolest things about Blog Talk Radio and blogging in general is that someone can kind of corner a market like that about something
that's an example.
About,
and if you're selling VW Rabbit parts, you know, you're going to make more, it'd be more efficient to buy an ad on that show than it would be to buy an ad in Time Magazine. I mean, you're going to get more. If you're going to do ferret health, if you're going to do a veterinarian and you want to talk about the health of ferrets, well, you're going to build an audience, and anybody who's selling ferret medicine, they're going to come to you.
That's
true. I mean, what do you say to people that the perception of you know, the blogosphere is considered, you know, the liberals' counterpart to the conservative talk radio. I don't really see it. I see almost as many right-wing bloggers that are left-wing bloggers. But what do you think of that perception that it's the blogosphere is a liberal bastion?
Well, I think it's partly based in reality. I think by some different measures, you can say there's a dominance. By dominance, I don't mean like 100-1, but say, I don't know. 2-1 or something like that, maybe even less of liberal to conservative in terms of prominence and popularity. There's some things like a student in my class was pointing out how if you go to Dig, like most of the Dig references that people choose are liberal blogs or something like that. I think there's some other ways that you can look at that. part of my explanation for that is that, you know, the online media was attractive for people who were out of power. And you've got to remember that from basically 2000 to 2006, the left was out of power in this country, at least in terms of elected political office at the national level. And so their whatever frustrations and angers they have had against the Bush administration, the Iraq war, online media was there as a channel to build up opposition. It would be interesting if McCain loses and there's a Democratic Congress and a Democratic Senate, and the perception is that the other way around, whether you'll see and sort of a reversal and more right-wing people getting involved in the opposition medium of online.
Interesting point. Whoever's out of power needs to use it to critique and offer, you know, some more insights. I think that's a good point.
Yep.
Well, we have some people in the chat room. If you guys have questions you want to get in before we wrap up, please either type them or you can give us a call. I know a couple people said they had trouble with the sound, so they had to go out and back in, but here they are.
Oh, I had a question then. Do you think whoever the next president is, probably more likely if it's Obama, but will the next president actually be a blogger?
I actually have trouble thinking that the really top political people will spend time blogging. Running for president, being a president, it's sort of a full-time job. And blogging is a pretty time-consuming hobby. I think there are a lot of politicians out there who are technically blogging, but it's actually their staff who are writing most of the blog, which is, of course, the same as the days of as we have now where most of their speeches are written. I think there's a little problem with that, though, is that we sort of all know that most political speeches are mostly written by speechwriters, but there's something about a blog where it's a little disappointing to find out that someone's personal reminiscences and I, and was all just, you know, for staff people. So on the one hand, there's going to be a problem of authenticity if we find out that somebody's blog is all essentially ghostwritten. On the other hand, I just don't see them taking the time to do it.
Interesting. Actually, I was at the Blog World Expo. No, what was it? No, Blog Her, sorry. Blog Her, and Elizabeth Edwards was the keynote speaker, and she was speaking about blogging, and people were asking her if she really writes her own blog, and someone asked a really funny question, but I see what they're getting at, which was, do you know your login and password to your accounts? You know, do you actually sign in, or do you dictate to an assistant who logs in and writes it for you? You know, and I think with blogging especially, there's a pretty high standard. There's a pretty high standard of it being personal, like you're saying, and authentic. So it is a challenge.
Yeah, and we've all seen these very sad corporate blogs where they're trying to be fun, and I'm sorry, I'm in my 40s, so to use the word hip, I should probably get a license or something, but they're trying to be fun and hip, and it just comes as sort of pathetic and looks like it was written by a committee, and it just doesn't work. I mean, whatever we learn about, like, technique in blogging, there's a style issue that's hard to imitate by somebody forcing it, or by people getting together in a committee and saying, okay, what's our message of the day, and let's tailor our blog post to that message. It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's an earnest and frank method of communication, and it becomes obvious when it's not that.
And the irony is, of course, that politics is the opposite. I mean, politics is about top-down control and message discipline. That's really the tension that's going on now in the political world, that where you have a lot of older political consultants and media people who lived in this world where, okay, what's our message of the day and our 7-second soundbite I mentioned, and no one in the campaign is allowed to deviate off message, whereas the social interactive world of blogging and these other websites is about spontaneity and free-reigning thought and going off on a tangent, and it's almost the antithesis of what used to be we called political communication during a campaign.
Definitely. Well, this has been great. We're running out of time, but it's been really interesting to talk with you, David, and thank you so much for joining us for
thank
the
you.
Interview.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see you at Blog World, the New Media Expo.
Yeah, tell everyone when they can catch your workshop.
Oh, yes. Well, you can sign up through the Blog World and New Media website. You can sign up for the workshop, and it's on the website. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Sean, for joining
Thank you, David.
Me.
We'll check out your book, Blog Wars. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Have a nice day. David Perlmutter and the Blog Wars is the name of the book. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining Alan and Hillary on the Alan Levy Show. Make sure to join the conversation by calling 347-677-0649 and listen to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio.